Press TV headlines: Iraq's main Shia parliamentary bloc nominates incumbent Nouri al-Maliki as prime minister. Also ahead this hour, a Palestinian official says there has been no breakthrough in the U.S. engineer talks with Israel. And European oil giants resist American pressure to stop their activities in Iran. It is 11 p.m. in London, England, and 3 a.m. in Islamabad, Pakistan. This is Press TV's World News. Well, we begin in Iraq, where the main Shia parliamentary bloc has chosen incumbent Nouri al-Maliki as its candidate for prime minister. In a televised address, Maliki said he is extending a hand to all political factions in his country to help him form a government.
It is the responsibility of all Iraqi political parties. All Iraqi political parties who were given the trust by the Iraqi people, they are now have the responsibility to bring about stability and security and national reconciliation. And they also have the responsibility to implement a program of growth which will help to rebuild Iraq and to develop the services sector and to provide the Iraqi people with their needs.
Well, the Iraqi National Alliance says it has chosen Maliki as its consensus candidate. The announcement is the first sign of hope of a government forming in months. Maliki's State of Law Coalition and the Iraqi National Alliance have joined forces, forming a bloc with 159 seats. But to form a government, a 163-seat majority is needed. Disagreements between leading Iraqi parties have left the country without a prime minister since the parliamentary polls back in March. Ex-Premier Iyad Allawi, whose bloc won most of the seats in the election, says he will not be part of a government led by Maliki. The International Monetary Fund has authorized the release of more than $700 million in funding for the Iraqi government. The $741 million financing is earmarked for reconstruction efforts. The funds are the second advance of a two-year loan issued back in February. The money was released to the Iraqi government after reviewing its progress in rebuilding the war-torn economy. Iraq currently has more than $1.2 billion in IMF resources available to repair its ailing economy. Well, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Middle East is in the region to hold talks with the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority. The meetings are aimed at saving newly resumed talks between the two sides. A senior Palestinian Authority official, however, says no breakthrough has been made.
4 weeks after brokering the resumption of talks between the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority, the U.S. Special Envoy is now shuttling between Jerusalem al-Quds and Ramallah in desperate efforts to salvage the talks. The talks now face collapse with the Israeli decision to end a 10-month partial freeze on settlement expansion. U.S. Special Envoy George Mitchell met with acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas for a second time in 24 hours on Friday. But the talks ended without a breakthrough. Reports say Abbas has once again said he will walk out of the talks if settlement activities continue. But the U.S. has managed to buy some time. Abbas has said he will hold off a decision on the fate of the talks until the Arab League discusses the issue at a meeting in Cairo next week. U.S. President Barack Obama has invested major political capital in the renewed talks, and he's left with little choice than to do all it takes to keep the two sides talking. Reports say Obama has even sent a letter to Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu, making generous offers in exchange for a 60-day extension of the moratorium. In the letter, Obama has apparently guaranteed the future sale of advanced missile systems and another squadron of F-35 advanced fighter aircraft to Israel. The proposal has reportedly been rejected by the Israeli side, and the U.S. has denied the very existence of such a letter.
Thus, the guiding principle for final status.
Internal divisions among Israeli politicians have also added fuel to the fire. On Tuesday, Israeli Foreign Minister proposed a controversial land swap with the Palestinians. His proposal was swiftly rejected by Netanyahu as not government position. Now Netanyahu, under pressure from within his pro-settler party, has to choose between the talks or the settlement, knowing that if he chooses the talks, he might have to say goodbye to his current position.
In other news, European oil giants are resisting U.S. pressure to stop buying Iranian oil. European oil companies have made it clear that they will continue to buy Iran's crude. They say they will only leave when their existing contracts expire. France's Total says it is still buying Iranian oil. Royal Dutch Shell says under the latest U.N. sanctions, buying Iranian crude oil is not illegal. And Norway Statoil says it is providing Tehran with technical assistance, while Italy's Eni says it will stay in Iran until its contracts expire. However, despite the official comments, the U.S. has announced that all these companies have voluntarily agreed to suspend all dealings with Iran. Japan is finding itself increasingly subject to foreign pressures. Our correspondent in Tokyo has more on how this is affecting the country's economic ties with Iran.
The headlines tell the story. Japan is giving up on Iran's Zaatagan oil field. And why? This newspaper says fear of reprisal from the U.S. This Japanese headline shouts, Japan oil surrenders to foreign pressure. The Zaatagan oil field development was first negotiated in 2001 and had originally been meant as a symbol of Japan-Iran friendship. But what is the official stance? I took a question directly to Japanese Foreign Minister Seiji Maehara. How can Japan maintain its friendly relationship with Iran if all it does is support U.S. policy?
I possess the understanding that Japan-Iran relations have been very friendly, and this is why we can speak with them directly about the need to address doubts about nuclear development and the importance of international coordination.
But he also admitted that U.S. pressure played a role.
The INPEX Oil Company is a global business corporation, and so they must take cognizance of the American domestic law that sanctions companies doing business with Iran.
We left the scene to speak with other Japanese leaders. Many here in the government district are concerned about the impact of the latest move. Takeo Hiranuma is practically the father of the Zaatagan deal. His visit to Iran as Japan's trade minister in July 2001 is what sealed the original bargain. Even now, he emphasizes the importance of the Persian Gulf region for Japan.
The connection between Japan and the Middle East is mostly based on energy relations. About 90% of Japan's oil comes from this area. In the 21st century, it will be important to maintain and deepen this relationship.
Some younger politicians are raising even more fundamental points.
The U.S.-Japan or Japan-U.S. relationship, I can say this, not the equal relationship, but the subordination to the United States is politically and militarily, and at the same time, economically. This is the serious question.
Japan's apparent inability to defend its national interests in the face of U.S. pressure is likely to be an enduring political concern. Michael Penn, Press TV, Tokyo.
Well, Pakistan's former president has apologized to his country for mistakes he made while he was in office. Pervez Musharraf says he plans to return to Islamabad as the head of a political party in time for the election slated to be held in 2013. Musharraf says he realized that his popularity had plummeted because of wrong decisions he made in the last year of his presidency. He seized power in a coup back in 1999 and resigned almost a decade later. His resignation came following a growing public protest over his decision to sack judges and declare a state of emergency. He's been living in exile in Britain ever since. Now, lawyers say Musharraf faces a number of court cases back in Pakistan. Well, for more on that Musharraf comeback, we're now joined by Muhammad Ali Saif, who is Musharraf's media spokesman, who's joining us on the line from London. Mr. Saif, thank you very much for joining our broadcast. Now, according to President Zardari, there is no room in Pakistan for Musharraf's political ventures, and he will remain in exile as long as he is alive. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, if Mr. Zardari has made this statement, I believe it's the other way around. I think there is no more room left for Mr. Zardari and his corrupt mafia to loot the country. I think there is no room left for their plundering of the country. I think the room is closing and the space is closing down on them, and they are on their way out. Their unpopularity has reached its climax in Pakistan, and I believe people like Musharraf, with a clean past, with a past not tainted with any allegations of corruption or nepotism, Pakistan needs leaders like Musharraf to cleanse the country and its problems created by people like Zardari and his mafia and his political colleagues. And I think that Pakistani nation needs an alternative option in leadership, credible leadership, leadership that has served them in the past and that has a CV and a history to be proud of. And I believe that Musharraf is that leader, and inshallah he will be in a position to lead the country forward and take it out of its present state of despair and despondency that the country is suffering from, the nation is suffering from, due to the loot and plunder and bad governance under the regime that is in power at present in Pakistan.
Rana, sir, speaking of good governance, many blame Musharraf for the arrest and handover of Dr. Afia Siddiqui, who has now become an icon of sorts in Pakistan. Now, how does Mr. Musharraf plan on taking back such a significant misstep?
I believe that this is just a propaganda and an allegation that has no basis. It's a baseless and a frivolous allegation. And there are innumerable allegations like that leveled by his political opponents. The Musharraf had no hand in handover of Afia Siddiqui. According to the record, the court record, judicial record, Afia Siddiqui was arrested on Afghan soil, from Afghan soil, in Ghazni. And there are terrorist allegations against her. I am not commenting on them. I don't want to criticize or kind of pass aspersions on those allegations. But insofar as the case is concerned, she has been arrested and convicted for crimes committed on Afghan soil against the U.S. forces. Now, a certain U.S. court has convicted her, and she is spending her sentence in the United States. Musharraf has no role. If at all anything had happened, now, according to her own allegations, she was kidnapped. I don't know to what extent they are true, but I mean, it is for a commission, for a judicial commission, for an impartial commission to probe those allegations, whether she was handed over or whether she was Musharraf had any hand in her handing over to the U.S. But I categorically deny any involvement by Musharraf, President Musharraf, in person in her case. Musharraf rather tried to use his personal influence to seek her release and to get her out of the United States in his personal capacity in the recent past. Insofar as other allegations are concerned, there are many other allegations. But Musharraf plans to go ahead, face these allegations, confront his allegators, and see. We will confront any court or any procedure that is required to be done, and inshallah he'll come clean out of such aspersions and claims.
Right now, sir, talking about coming clean now, Musharraf's legacy, as we mentioned, will be defined by his state of emergency declaration and the subsequent chaos that caused, eventually forcing him into exile. Now, realistically speaking, is Mr. Musharraf expecting an apology that he said today to be enough to erase from memory an act that has now been declared unconstitutional and even punishable by death?
Well, you see, these are just interpretations of by his opponents of the state of emergency and the Supreme Court decision in that regard. If you go through the judgment, and those people who care to read such judgments or who bother to understand such judgments are very clear on this issue. The judgment was not at all on November 3. There was just a paragraph in which the court commented on November 3 action, but there were the judgment was basically on the appointment of two judges in the Supreme Court who had challenged their appointment, cancellation of their appointment. And insofar as November 3 case is concerned, Pakistani Supreme Court has a standing decision which is there, and that is the Tikka Iqbal case, which validated that emergency. Insofar as these judges who have rendered this decision go to Pakistan, look at any internet site, look at the court's proceedings, and you will find that there are even allegations and claims that even this judgment was forged on the basis of which the court has rendered the judgment in July 2009. The judgment which they make they use as basis for arguing this case was discussed on television channels by lawyers. They showed papers in which the signatures of judges were either not done in the proper way or were post-dated signatures. So, I mean, there are several allegations, there are several reasons to doubt the credibility of such cases. Pakistani Supreme Courts have rendered decisions based on political considerations, and this is also one of such decisions, in my opinion,
right,
which is based on political considerations,
right,
rather than judicial considerations.
Right, we will have to leave it there. That was Mr. Mohammed Ali Saif, Musharraf's media spokesman, joining us there on the line from London. Mr. Saif, thank you very much for your comments. Well, you're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. Iraq's main Shia parliamentary bloc nominates incumbent Nouri al-Maliki as prime minister. A Palestinian official says there has been no breakthrough in the U.S. engineered talks with Israel. And European oil giants resist American pressure to stop their activities in Iran.